Hey everybody, Jason Klom here. Before we get to this week's episode, which is Rodney Allen Rippey, I wanted to remind you that I have a Kickstarter campaign for my comedy pilot, my sketch comedy pilot called Community Service. If you just go to communityservice.stolendress.com, it'll send you right there. You can search for Community Service Sketch Pilot or my name, Jason Klom, K-L-A-M-M, on Kickstarter as well, and you'll get right to it. I have a bunch of people who have been very nice and offered to help me shoot this for free, but I do need to feed them and water them, as it were, and basically use up as little of their precious time as possible. So we need to shoot the entire thing in one location in one weekend, and that's what we're raising the funds for. And, we're trying to raise $7,000, and we have 3 weeks left to do it. So if you would, go to communityservice.stolendress.com and send a little something our way, if you would, just to get comedy going. And also, in that vein, really, some of the characters that are going to be in that sketch pilot are 20 years old. They go back to when I started doing sketch comedy in 1993. When I say doing, I mean learning. That's the stuff that I recorded on tape with my best friend Dan. And each week we discuss that. We try and put out comedy on vinyl every Wednesday. We try and put out this other podcast called Dan and Jay's Comedy Hour, the podcast, every Friday, where my best friend Dan, who lives in Boise, and I, we just talk about our old sketches briefly, and then we screw around for an hour. So we just, you know, have a lot of fun just talking about being friends, etc. But we also discuss our burgeoning comedic talents as 13 and 14-year-old kids. So yeah, again, if you would, go to communityservice.stolendress.com, check that out. Go to djchour.stolendress.com, or just look up Dan and Jay's Comedy Hour on Facebook or iTunes. You'll find it there. And this week's episode is Rodney Allen Rippey. We had a lot of fun. I wanted to bring him in because he did play young Black Bart in Blazing Saddles. He's well known, of course, for you know, the Jack in the Box commercial. And he actually did have a vinyl album that came out in the 70s. Most people, you know, they considered it a novelty, but it was him singing. An adorable little kid singing. You really, you can't get better than that. It's adorable. It's very sweet. So yeah, this is not really a vinyl episode per se, but we did have a lot of fun talking with Rodney about his career, and obviously Blazing Saddles definitely makes its way in there, being my favorite movie of all time. Anyway, thanks for listening to me ramble, and enjoy this episode. Alright, everybody, Comedy on Vinyl podcast. This week, I have Rodney Allen Rippey with me. Thanks so much for being here, man.
It's good to be here.
This is a lot of fun. So, we don't have a specific album we want to talk about, except it would be kind of fun, first of all, if people don't know who you are. Mm-hmm. I mean, back in the 70s, you were the Jack in the Box kid.
Yep.
You know, you were in Blazing Saddles, which was big for me. You
yep.
were young Black Bart, which is so good.
There you go.
But you did have an album. At mm-hmm. one point. Do you want to talk about it a little bit?
Well, my album was on the music side, mm-hmm. where it was an album called Take Life a Little Easier.
Mm-hmm.
That was recorded by Bell. It was on Bell Records.
Okay.
And so, actually, believe it or not, I don't know if it's still to date, but I was told that I'm one of the youngest people to ever chart on Billboard.
That's awesome.
With the Take Life a Little Easier album, and that was kind of like one of the other ancillary things that came from the original, the Jack in the Box commercial that started back in 72, where my whole career began.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I am curious. I mean, you're a well-adjusted adult, so what was it like starting out, like having this kind of stuff happen to you so young?
Honestly, I lived on the west side of Long Beach.
Mm-hmm.
Came from a middle-class family. There was no, you know, lineage of entertainers in our family.
Okay.
It was just that my mom was one of these incredibly just brilliant people, you know. Mm-hmm. And so she saw something in me one day, and how it all got started. I was sitting in the living room at the age of 3.
Mm-hmm.
My mom is in the kitchen. She's washing dishes or doing something in the kitchen, and I'm watching The Little Rascals.
Mm-hmm.
And I am laughing hysterically at Buckwheat.
Mm-hmm.
So my mom comes in the room and she goes, "What is so funny?" And I point at the TV.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, "Oh, you're laughing at Buckwheat." And mm-hmm. I'm like, "Yep." And she goes, "Well, Rodney, Buckwheat is older than I am.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, Mama, you know, he's my age. He's little like me.
Right.
She goes, no. Rodney Buckwheat's been around a long time. So she tells me the whole history of the Little Rascals. And I was like, wow. And so she goes, wait a minute. What, you think you can do this? And I'm thinking, yeah. And she goes, wait a minute. Whoa, seriously, you wouldn't be afraid to be on television with cameras and people and lights? I shook my head. She goes, really? So she goes, okay, calling my bluff. Let me see what I can do. So she walks over to the Yellow Pages and starts flipping through the Yellow Pages. And there were talent agents in the Yellow Pages.
Sure.
And so my mom started making these calls, and she's sitting here with the apron on, with a dish rag in her hand, and she's going, you know, I have a cute son, and I think he's got what it takes to be a star. What do I need to do? And people were like, oh, okay, well, you know. And so after several calls, she hit this one guy, and he's like, oh, yeah, bring him to L.A., no problem, I'll meet with you. Mm-hmm. And so my mom's like, okay, cool. So she takes me to L.A., and she introduces me to this guy in his office on Sunset.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, it's the building where CNN is in.
Oh, okay. Sure.
So we go up there, and we meet this guy. He looks at me and goes, oh, he's darling. Yeah, I'll sign him right now. That'll be $1,500. No, that'll be $500.
Oh, shit.
And my mom goes, $500? I remind you, this is 1972.
Right.
So my mom goes, well, wait a minute. He has a brother and sister that are really cute, too. And the guy goes, well, if they're anything like him, I'll sign them, too. That'll be
$1,500. Oh, no.
And my mom goes, but don't you want to meet them first? Oh, no. If they're like him, I'll take them.
Uh-huh.
So my mom comes back home and cooks this fantastic dinner for my dad and gives him the news.
Uh-huh.
Fred, they like him. Matter of fact, he'll even take, you know, Beverly and Kenneth. It's only going to be $1,500. Mm. And my dad nearly choked, you know. He goes, $1,500 to do what? Well, Fred, they're going to take his pictures, and he'll make up the money because he said he'll put them right to work.
Right.
And so my dad said, look, this is your idea. If you think it's going to work, take the money out of the bank and do it.
Mm-hmm.
So my mom was ecstatic. She took the money. We make another trip up to L.A. My mom gives him like a cashier's check. Guy takes the money, and that's it.
Yeah.
So a week goes by. My mom says, you know what? I hadn't heard anything from that guy.
Yeah.
So my mom she goes, wait a minute. Let's go up there. So we jump in the car. We go back up to his office.
Oh, my God.
And when we get into the building, my mom goes to knock on the door. And there were like four sets of parents down the hallway pointing like, is there anyone in there?
Uh-huh.
And my mom's like, what? And he's like, is anyone in there? So my mom walks down the hallway and she goes, what's going on? And there were parents with their kids. She goes, I think we've been duped. Mm-hmm. I think that guy took our money. So my mom goes, wait a minute. Hold on. So my mom goes downstairs to security, says, come up and open this door. They open the door and the guy's gone.
Oh my God. Now
they call LAPD and then they send over this special detective that knew about the entertainment industry.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, well, parents, look. First of all, you guys need to go with SAG. And everybody goes, who's SAG? What is that?
Yeah.
And, oh, well, those are the real agents in L.A. And so he hands out a photocopy of a list of agents.
Uh-huh.
And now we're all staring at each other. So now mom comes home, breaks the terrible news to my dad, the $1,500's gone.
Yeah.
My dad nearly has a heart attack again. So, but she goes, but Fred, there's a whole list of agents. And my dad's like, that's it? No.
Uh-huh.
That's it. We've lost $1,500. No. And my mom's like, wait a minute, but it's not going to cost anything.
Mm-hmm.
So my dad, after much conversation, we got signed with another agent. Believe it or not, it's in the same building. But that building, that's the reason why the guy was kind of like a dirtbag in the middle of real agents.
Uh-huh.
And so my mom met with the lady and come to find out she really was a SAG-regulated agent.
Mm-hmm.
And then so my mom got me, my brother, and my sister signed up. And my sister did a commercial for Banquet's Fried Chicken.
Okay.
My brother, he went out for the old Coca-Cola commercial. I like to teach the world.
Uh-huh.
And I was the last one, and I'm the youngest one of the group, and I'm feeling bummed. And I'm like, oh, this is not going to go so well.
Yeah.
Then the phone rang for Jack in the Box. And my agent said, hey, you know, to my mom, we got an audition for Rodney. it's a big one. Just take him in. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't know how it's going to turn out. So at the time, my agent said, it's a cattle call. There'll probably be 100 kids called in.
Mm-hmm.
And so my mom takes me in. And when we get there, my mom sees all these gorgeous little kids. And she goes, oh, my God, look at all these cute kids. Boys, girls, black, white, Asian, Hispanic, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like in bow ties and their hair's in pigtails. And my mom's going, oh, God, Rodney, just try your best. And I'm this little kid with this big old gigantic afro. So I'm in the running, too, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
So I go in the audition. And if you go on YouTube or whatever, you can see the original commercial.
Yeah.
And you'll see me. And the guy says, well, what's your name? And I said, Rodney. Rodney what? Rodney Allen Rippey. And he goes, what's that in front of you? I go, that's the Jumbo Jack from Jack in the Box. And he goes, do you think you could ever get a bite out of it?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, it's too big to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, take a bite. So I took this big bite. And he said, tell me how you like it. And I said, I can't talk. My mouth's full. And my mom, you know, that was it. They cracked up laughing. And they send me out the door. And my mom is waiting for me because this is my first audition.
Right, right.
And that was the last thing she told me before I walked in the door. Rodney, I smell food cooking. If they give you food, don't talk with your mouth full. And that was the last thing I remember my mom saying. So I leave. And when I open the door, my mom is waiting outside the door. And she sees these people dying laughing hysterically.
Uh-huh.
And my mom is like, oh my God, he bombed so bad they're laughing at him. Let's get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
So we get back to Long Beach, and about an hour or two, my agent calls, and they said, you know, my agent's like, they love him. Take him back. And my mom's like, he came out, they were dying laughing. They laughed him out of the place. They go, whatever he did, they love him. Take him back. So the next day I had a call back. I went back. There were even more casting people, and I landed a Jack in the Box spot, which was a commercial campaign that lasts 14 years.
It's crazy.
The Academy of Television Arts and Science gave me an award for having one of the greatest commercials in the past 50
That's awesome.
Years.
That's awesome.
And I, from there, it went into the album, mm-hmm. Take Life a Little Easier, the whole Jack in the Box campaign. And I was fortunate enough to do all the shows that you could possibly think of from the 70s, mm-hmm. you know, $6 Million Man, Police Story, Medical Center, Dr. Welby, MD, The Odd Couple.
Really?
Oh, you know,
that's good.
Dinah Shore, Mike Douglas, Johnny Carson.
That's
crazy. And my family, and again, we're on the west side of Long Beach. And when I hit the Jack in the Box thing and everything started spiraling so heavy,
mm-hmm.
my mom sat me and my brother and sister down and said, okay, everybody's work. How you like it? And my brother and sister looked at each other and said, Mom, we don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
All the makeup and the lights and the people, we don't like it. Let Rodney do it. And I'm the youngest one, and my mom goes, oh, my God. Okay. All right, your brother and sister don't want to do it, and they're older. So, Rodney, I know you don't want to do nothing they don't want to do, so just tell me now, and we'll wrap this up. I'm like, no, I'm having fun.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom said, are you sure? And my brother and sister go, yeah, we'll support him. We'll support him. So my mom said, okay, I'll continue to take you to the auditions. We'll continue to do this as long as you're having fun.
Mm-hmm.
So, needless to say, I continued trucking.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with some of the biggest names in entertainment. And then I landed, of course, your favorite, mm-hmm. Mr. Mel Brooks with Blazing Saddles. And I can't say that there was any one thing that was tragic or horrifying or negative. And so I had the dream audition and the whole I dream just life going through the entertainment industry as a kid.
Yeah.
And I have no, you know, a lot of people said, come on, there had to be some bad moments. And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
You know, plus 72 was a groovy time.
Sure.
73 and all through the 70s. You know, a lot of times I meet people and, I always tell them, well, where, you know, they say, oh, you're Rodney. And I go, where were you in 72? And they go, man, 72.
Yeah.
Man, and everybody starts thinking, man, I was back in blah, blah, blah. And it was just, you can see the happiness that comes over people, you know, and they joke around about my afro, and I go, hey, you, I bet you had an afro too, and you know, you have Jewish guys go, oh yeah, I had this big old curly fro, man, everybody had a fro, you know, and so everybody was in bell bottoms, and so, but I did have a great life, and so my album, Take Life a Little Easier, you know, there were people like, you know, Billy Preston on the album that worked on the thing, you know. And I mean, so I was fortunate enough to be touched and touch base with some of the greatest people of that time. I worked with Sammy Davis Jr. and did, you know, a dance number with him. I met God, Red Fox and just people who my dad thought were cool.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And my dad, my family never went gaga about anything.
Mm-hmm.
But when we got the call and said that I was doing the Carson show, my dad was like, this is big time. Because every night, that was my dad's show, watching Johnny Carson. And when we went up there, dad goes, I'm going to this. I want to go see the taping of this.
Yeah.
You know, normally it was just my mom running me all over Hollywood and the Valley for auditions and things. And it was just that there was a great balance. Dad was the, you know, the old school breadwinner for the house, and mom was a home technician, you know, not a housewife. I called her a home technician because she ruled the house like her castle, and she loved it, you know. She loved what she did, and she took care of everything, you know. And so I was very fortunate that to have a mom and a family like that that, you know, raised, you know, put us all in the opportunity to act, and we just had a great support base. It was never competitive.
Yeah.
It was always fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Can you give me 1 second? I'm sorry. All right, good. Okay. So let's talk a little bit. I mean, you were super young when you did Blazing Saddles. But what kind of memories do you have from being on set?
I remember that there was just a lot of laughter. I mean, there were takes after takes of people cracking. I mean, they just couldn't hold it together.
Yeah.
The production, there was more. It was just as much laughter as people receive watching it at home or at the movie theaters in the production. And if you can imagine Harvey Korman and all these crazy people together in male, and there were takes that the people just couldn't get through the scenes. They just lost it. Somebody in the crew would start laughing. But I remember being this little kid, and they wanted to always kind of put me in different scenes, you know, kind of like a Where's Waldo type of thing. And the whole thing is, I was fortunate enough that I played the role of Black Bart, you know, and that was a scene when, after he had captured Gene Wilder and he had him in jail, and he was talking to Gene, he said, so tell me, how, you know, what were you like when you were a kid? And he goes, no, you tell me. And so he was like, okay, well, way back in Western times when my family was crossing a wagon train, and you see this wagon train, and there's this one black family all the way at the end of the wagon train. I was a little boy between the parents. And then all the Indians kind of rode down the hill, and they only surrounded the black family. They didn't.
Right.
And Mel was the chief.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, they, I mean, the things that I remember is just, I knew it was big, you know.
Sure.
The personalities were big, you know, and it's just, it seemed like one of those things that you couldn't imagine working on something like that. But I knew, you know, from a little kid, my mom always said, Rodney, remember, do you see all these lights? Do you see these people standing around? This is very serious business. Don't worry about nothing else.
Yeah.
Just do your job.
Yeah.
Just don't worry about nothing. And I'm like, okay. And that took a lot of pressure off me.
Yeah.
And my mom was great. She would help me go over my lines. And there were things that, believe it or not, my mom would do that it was her system. And the funny thing is, this is honest to God, till this very day, people can practically talk to me when I'm asleep. They can wake me up out of a sound sleep and start talking to me. And I can talk to you and have a full conversation and go right back to sleep. Never knew I talked to you.
Oh, my gosh.
But my mom, when I was auditioning, she used to sit next to the bed and recite lines to me. And uh-huh. I would lay there and recite stuff, and she would just say, just lay there and just repeat it back to me. And my mom would sit there and do that, and I mean, she would, like, I'd doze off, and she'd wake me up, and she'd say the line, and I'd pick right back up.
Yeah.
And so she knew he's got it.
Yeah.
So that's when she was cool. So the next day when we hit the set, I was ready.
Yeah.
So I was one that had a pretty high retention level, and my mom was always there to keep me focused and to say, look, don't worry about the camera crew, the lights, the mic guy. Don't worry about nothing.
Yeah.
Just do your job.
Go ahead.
So that was it. You know, when you start thinking about, so it was like I had this great coach and mm-hmm. or just a support. There was never anything in it for her or my family or nothing. It was just like my mom was just kind of happy to see me poking along through the industry, you know.
Yeah.
And meeting the people that we did, and there were so many first, you know, like I did the first ever American Music Awards.
Really?
And it was me and Donny Osmond and Ricky Siegel from the Partridge Family Michael Jackson.
Wow.
And so they came up when, and actually, rest in peace, Dick Clark's favorite moment, he told me this personally mm-hmm. before he passed away, his very favorite show was that very first one where I was playing a miniature Michael Jackson and Ricky Siegel was playing a miniature Donny Osmond, and they brought us out together, you know, and it looked like I was Michael, you know, in like a miniature form. So, and if you go on YouTube, you can type in American Music Awards and Rodney Allen Rippey, and you'll see the actual clip.
That's amazing. I'll have to watch that.
Oh, it's killer.
That's pretty great. What was it like being shuffled around? Obviously, your parents were, you know, seems like they had a straight head about it, so they must have kept your head straight. But, I mean, all of a sudden, I mean, people want to make a doll, people want to make an album. Like, what, you know, did they run it all by you? Is that how they had?
Believe it or not, yeah. Everything was run by me. It was a lot of input. It mm-hmm. was like the Rodney Allen Rippey doll had a voice box in it that mm-hmm. you could pull this string, and it would say like 8 different things.
Uh-huh.
So we went into the studio, and I laid down these voice tracks, which they put on this little mini record
uh-huh.
that was inside this voice box. And wow. so when you would pull it, this thing would talk.
Mm-hmm.
Because me and my brother actually destroyed one of them to find out, how does this thing talk? And my brother goes, man, let's take this thing apart. So we had, you know, a few boxes of them, and oh my God, you know, what I would do for a brand new one if I could find one. But we destroyed one to get to the voice box, and it was like this little miniature, like 3-inch 45.
That's crazy.
And it had my voice, and it said, hi, I'm Rodney Allen Rippey, and I love all the children of the world. It was all these crazy little things. And so, but what it was, you know, you asked how was it? It was just that I felt like I was a little kid with a lot of friends.
Yeah.
And everywhere I went, they were like, hey, Rodney. I'm like, hey, you know. And it was all these funny things. We lived on the west side of Long Beach. And, you know, I'm a little kid. And believe it or not, our house became like a tourist attraction.
Yeah.
And there would be people who would literally drive down my street and stop in front of the house to wait to see if they could see me. So one day I'm out in the front yard playing. And my mom was just in the house doing something. And she just had this funny feeling like, where the heck is Rodney? I hadn't seen him. So she peeps out the window, and there's a car out there, and I have a line of people giving autographs. Mom is like, oh my God. And she comes barreling out of the house like, Rodney, don't do that, you know. And I was like, oh, Mom, they just want autographs. She's like, baby, yeah. No.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, okay, thank you, everyone. And my mom brings me in the house. She goes, Rodney, are you crazy? You can't do that. Somebody's going to grab you. I'm like, why would anybody grab me, you know?
Right.
My mom's like, oh, Rodney. She goes, I got to keep an eye on you. You can't do this, you know? So even till this day, you know, I meet people everywhere I go, and people remember, you know, it's funny, you know, I'll meet people, and they go, God, did I go to school with you? Right. And they go, God, you seem awfully familiar. What is your name? And I was like, I'm Rodney. Are you Rodney Allen Rippey? Oh my God! You know, they would freak out. And you know, and I just think like, okay. And I enjoy people letting them have their moment, you know,
sure,
because again, it was a good thing for them, and it was a great thing for me. Mm-hmm. So, but to answer, and I hope I answered the question. And the deal was, how was it? It was amazing.
Yeah,
you know, just traveling, meeting people, and it was a different Hollywood back then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and coming from Long Beach, I kind of felt like the hometown hero type of deal.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And there were so many things in Long Beach that I was, you know, a part of. The, you know, the good grief, I did. They brought me down to the Philharmonic, and they wanted me to be the conductor.
That's awesome.
And I literally have a plaque on my wall from the Long Beach Philharmonic where I was the conductor.
That's great. Oh, and my God.
So these are, I mean, so many firsts.
Yeah.
And the funny thing was, my dad at the time was working for the city of Long Beach in the sanitation department. He was a trash man.
Uh-huh.
And the funny thing was, he was always really hush-hush. Nobody knew that I was his son. Nobody never made... They never put it together. Right?
That's just funny.
And what happened was, Ebony Magazine wanted to do a story on me.
Uh-huh.
And wanted to interview the whole family. And they were like, Mr. Rippey, so what do you do? Uh-huh. We want to go to your job. And my dad's like, no. No, you don't want to go to my job. And they're like, well, what do you do, Fred? Oh, no. It's not about me. It's about Rodney.
Yeah.
And they kept pushing. And finally, my dad, it was kind of like he was embarrassed. And he was like, I'm a trash man. And they were like, this is great.
Of
and my
course.
Dad's like, oh, no. Oh, we're coming to your job. So my dad, he goes to the yard.
Uh-huh.
And he's rolling out in his trash truck with his partner.
Yeah.
And he's commandeered by Ebony Magazine.
Oh, my God.
Mr. Ribby, we're going to follow you on your route. And my dad's like, no. And it goes through like wildfires through the city.
Yeah.
Fred, that's Fred's boy. And my dad, and they were like, Fred, why didn't you tell us Rodney was your son? And he was like, I didn't want to tell you guys. And so turns out that it was good for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, I was just as proud about my dad that I guess he was proud about me,
mm-hmm.
and my family. And it was never any, like I said, and so it was a different time.
Mm-hmm.
There. And again, you know, you see the current Hollywood and I don't know how things have changed so much, but for me, you know, it was a thing that I was fortunate to have great family, and everybody supported me, and my brother and sister, they were there, and they were just like right there behind me to go all the way. So,
yeah, yeah.
And a lot of times when I would travel, you know, they would give me gifts, you know, because I was a little kid.
Sure.
And my agent said, whatever you do, whatever you give Rodney, give him three of them, because he's taking two back for his brother and sister. And so my sister and brother, they racked up. So whenever I got a gift, there were three of them.
That's
so
amazing.
So when me and my mom were traveling all around the country, and God, I went to, matter of fact, I performed the album in London.
Wow.
And I did a performance in London with Take Life a Little Easier, a whole concert.
Oh, my God.
And we saw the changing of the guards. We went through Buckingham Palace. I mean, treated like royalty.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole deal with the black little funny cop cars with the we're going through the city, you know. And my mom was like, God almighty, all this for you, Rodney? Right. My mom was like, let's just ride the wheels off of this
course.
Thing.
Of course, yeah.
And wow. So... It again, nothing but a dream.
Man. Yeah, yeah.
Nothing but a dream.
Did your parents, were they, I mean, obviously you start so early. Normally I would ask what your influences were, but you started so early that you're kind of learning as you go. Were your parents ever interested in entertainment, or did they keep any comedy around the house? I'm just curious what that was like.
No. You know what? I tell you what, there was a little comedy. It was like Richard Pryor. It might have a Richard Pryor album.
Yeah.
Musically, there was like, you know, my parents were always playing the Staple Singers and the OJs and stuff like that,
uh-huh.
you know, and Bobby Blue Bland and B.B. King.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, so it just music, but it was never anything like my, it's funny, my dad has a killer Fender guitar, which I'm trying to hijack from him, but
uh-huh.
he played the guitar, but not professionally. It was just something that he did.
Yeah.
And there was no real heavy influences. You know, my mom always liked, you know, Tina Turner and, you know, all the ladies who sang and,
sure.
and Aretha Franklin, all, you know, the typical inspirations, you know, that most women would have, I guess, of performers. And it just turned out that, you know, it was just a fluke that it was perfect timing.
Yeah.
That's all it was. And it was never any type of setup. My mom and dad, no one had any clue that that would have happened.
Right, right.
So no preconceived deals. It just kind of fell into place.
That's so funny. Did you listen to much, you said maybe a Richard Pryor album, so you probably didn't listen to a lot of comedy around the house. Did you watch a lot of TV? I mean, you said your dad watched Tonight Show every night. So.
Yeah, we watched a lot of TV and, you know, and everything from, you know, gosh, the typical stuff. You know, my dad always liked watching Sanford and Son, and then we always would watch Mod Squad and all the typical shows. And the funny thing was, some of these shows that my dad would watch, I ended up landing a job on them, and my dad was just really tripping, you know, because he was like, God, we've been watching this stuff on TV, and here's Rodney in the middle of the stuff. So, and it was good, you know, but I was fortunate that I just had the type of parents that, one of the funny things was, this is what happened. My dad had a best friend named Bay Hall, the Halls, and they had two sons and a daughter, and my dad had two sons and a daughter. And so when the Halls would come over to our house, it was the Rippies hosted the Rippy talent contest. So while my dad, Mr. and Mrs. Rippy and Mr. and Mrs. Hall did their thing, and they would sit there and they might have a beer or sit there and talk, the kids were arranging this talent contest. So we finally get everything together, and so we would have to battle. We would have these talent contests, and so we would have these lip sync contests, and our parents would be cracking up laughing. But I guess that was the thing that kind of loosened us up, you know, because our parents were like, okay, well, when we go to Bay and M's house and they host, they've got to entertain. So, you know, they would, we would have these variety shows, these crazy variety shows. And, you know, they're putting, you know, my sister's got my mom's wig on and she's doing Tina Turner. And me and my brother are singing backup. And it was just kind of crazy. And so I think that was the thing that we would fool around and do. But it was never, again, no one had any clue that this thing would have been so perfect.
Sure. Yeah. It's. I mean, again, it sounds like you have no problem talking about it, but your parents, doesn't seem like they would have let you grow up with a big head about it either. Like, you must have enjoyed it, but didn't like.
Well, you know, I had real old school parents. You know, I had the type of parents that, you know, even in the height of my career, and I've got 3 Jack in a Box commercials running simultaneous on all channels.
Yeah.
My mom would still jack me up and wear my butt out if I got into something. Which I appreciate, you know, because I understood why mom was, you know, it wasn't like she was just, you know, I'd get my tail blistered for something weird, you know, it's like I was being a goofy kid and she was trying to save me from myself, and a lot of times, you know, as an adult now, I think back and I go, wow, you know, that was why, you know, mom wanted me to be mindful of this, And I always thought about this thing now, and I'm like, you know what? I can't say that there was any regrets to anything. You know? And I had, you know, I had great parents, and it was never any big headed stuff because my mom was like, I remember my mom told me, matter of fact, when we were in London, and I was performing, I'm in this hotel, and it's about 2:30 in the morning. Somehow the word leaked out that I was there. And at 2:30 in the morning, I'm asleep. My mom is asleep. We've been traveling for hours. And we hear this, Rodney, 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 outside the hotel. And my mom gets up and looks out the window, and there's like 500 people standing out on the street screaming my name.
Oh my God.
And my mom wakes me up out of a sound sleep. She goes, Rodney, you've got to come to the window. You've got to see this. She goes, but you need to wave. So my mom gets me together, and she straightens my fro up because it's all lopsided because I've been sleeping on it. And so she takes me, and she goes, Rodney, I'm going to pull the curtain back, and I want you to wave and smile. So she turns the lights on, and it's like, I'm like the Pope, literally, like the Black Pope. So you call me Bope or whatever. And I'm waving in the window, and they start cheering.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, Mom, how long do I have to do this? She's like, just keep waving. And then I'm blowing kisses and standing there and waving, and they're just, wow. And these people are going nuts. And so this goes on for like 30 minutes.
Jesus.
And so finally, I'm like, I'm going to bed. And they're like, oh, they'd scream again, and I'd wave again. I'm like, Mom, I'm getting tired. My arm's getting tired. She goes, okay, Rodney. So my mom comes and blows a couple kisses and waves and closes the curtain. But my mom said to me, she goes, Rodney, do you see all these people? Do you know what time it is that all these people are out here in the cold? You know, in London, it's foggy and cool. And she said, don't ever let this go to your head.
Mm-hmm.
She said, the moment that you start thinking you're somebody, she said, these people will hate you and turn away.
Yeah.
And I mean, she told me that, at 5 years old.
Yeah.
And she told me with no smile on her face, she was serious as a heart attack. And I was like, wow. and it sank in. Then... And it continues to this very day. There are people who I've met, I've dated girls and never even told them that I had a past in the entertainment industry. And someone goes, do you know who your boyfriend is? And like, his name's Rodney. Go, no, that's Rodney Allen Rippey.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had girls go, do you used to do something in TV? I go, yeah, a little bit, And then they go, I Googled you and I didn't know. I'm like, yeah, well, what's the tell?
Yeah, right.
Why didn't you tell me? I'm like, am I supposed to tell you? Like, hey, baby, back in the day, I did this Jack in the Box commercial. I had this doll and, I cut the ribbon to King's Island at SeaWorld. And let me tell you about these things,
Right, right.
But I'm fortunate that I've had all of these things and met the people that I have had over time and still meeting people.
Yeah.
Till this very day. And so I can't say enough. It's like, so now I'm in show development. Mm-hmm. I'm working on my own packages, my own projects. I have sets of different people that I'm working with, like, working on a reality show concept with a buddy of mine. His name's James Andrew. He's a designer.
Mm-hmm.
A designer to the stars. He's worked in making incredible, like boxing trunks for MMA fighters and things like this, and ring suits and all these wild, costumes and things for boxers and MMA guys. And he has the contract for Smokin' Joe Frazier.
Uh-huh.
And so we're putting together this reality show called Taylor Wars, where people are going to be battling, where they're going to bring tailors together to battle over certain jobs.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of never been done.
You're right.
And I'm also working with a guy named Marvin Spruill, and we're putting together, and I'm one of the co-executive producers for the Country Soul Music Awards.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people don't realize all of the contributions that African Americans have had in country.
Right, right.
And so, and it isn't about a black thing, it's more or less the soulful side of country.
Sure.
You got people like Ronnie Millsap.
Sure.
They call him the Soul Man.
Mm-hmm.
Ronnie Millsap makes no bones about it. His sound comes from a lot of soul singers.
Mm-hmm.
You got Wynonna Judd, Deanne Carter. Of course, you got Darius Rucker, Charlie Pride, all the rest of them.
Yeah.
Ray Charles.
Sure.
And so we are putting together an award show, first ever award show, where we're going to honor the soulful side of country. That's awesome. Also bust out a new genre, really push hard to bust out a new genre of country.
That's awesome.
And which will open it up, and my buddy, he's an authority on country soul, and we got CDs from Latin guys that mm-hmm. have a soulful sound to them. We have a Chinese guy, mm-hmm. That sings, and young, these are not older guys, these are young people coming up playing country music, and so we think it's going to be a pretty neat thing.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Are there places where people can, is it possible to buy your record anywhere except for like on vinyl?
what I'm looking to do, honestly, is to repackage it.
Uh-huh.
I'm looking to remaster it on CD and re-release it.
Yeah.
And because I've had emails come to my personal email, and people have said, Rodney, you know, I grew up with your album. Where can I get a copy of Take Life a Little Easy? And I go, wow. And they go, I loved it as a kid. I want it on CD. So I'm thinking like, maybe I need to release it.
Yeah, right.
So these are future projects, maybe with an attached or an accompanying children's book.
Oh, great.
I have a concept. It's about a children's book called Cool Like Me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a book about, you know, kids. You know, when you're a little kid, sometimes you don't feel like you're in your right skin.
Sure.
You know, and it's about a little boy with freckles, a little white boy with, you know, cute freckles all over him, you know. Mm-hmm. And kids were making fun of him at first.
Mm-hmm.
And he came home and he's crying his eyes out, and his mom says, well, you're special.
Mm-hmm.
They're normal. They're just ordinary.
Right.
You're special. That's why they're laughing at you, because they wish they were like you. And his confidence goes through the ceiling.
That's cute. Like
so he comes back to school, and these kids are, hey, you know, they want to call him Freckle or whatever they want to call him. And he goes, hey, you guys are just ordinary. I'm special. And then it turns, the whole thing spins around, and he does this reverse psychology on them. And the mm-hmm. kids, now they're taking ballpoint pens and trying to put freckles on their face to kind of hang with him. And so, moral of the story, freckles are cool.
I like it. That's awesome. Well, if that album, if you do re-release it, let us know so that we can talk about it and, you know, and put clips. Is there anywhere I can find a clip on YouTube even?
Yeah, you can. If you go on to there, I believe you'll be able to get the actual cut of Take Life a Little Easier.
Oh, okay.
You'll hear it.
Because I'd like to put that at the end of the podcast. That'd be fun for people.
Not a problem. And matter of fact, I'll try to dig up a digital copy of it.
Okay.
Do some hunting.
A little bit of hunting.
Yeah.
Well, I thank you so much for doing this. This has been a lot of fun. What is there anything you'd like to plug, like Twitter, Facebook, anything like that?
Yeah. Well, you could just catch me, Rodney Allen Rippey, on Facebook.
Okay.
You can catch me on Twitter. You know, say hello. I'm still very much involved with the industry, and I'm still looking to get out there and do good things and host and have fun and and just enjoy life.
Awesome. Rodney, thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun.
It's a pleasure, man.
Guys, thank you for listening as usual, and as always, have a good thing. Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. Please visit StolenDress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, and if you like us, give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. You can find us on Facebook.com/ComedyOnVinyl, Twitter @ComedyOnVinyl, and find everything else at ComedyOnVinyl.com.
Stop and walk. It's all right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Be gesinnt. Take off. Has the gesehen in deine Leben? They darker than us.